Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
By the way, congratulate me this Christmas. I'm going for it. No antidepressants.
Somebody ought to teach that little humbug some Christmas spirit.
I could feel the Christmas noose beginning to tighten. Maybe what happened next was inevitable.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurt it out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 2-inch range ball air rifle.
Ooh. No. Shoot your eye out.
Now, what do you call this, Edith, huh?
That was a Christmas present.
What fathead has spent any money on a thing like that?
From your mother.
I must find some way to keep Christmas from coming.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
It's been 7 years straight for my family, and just imagine all seven Holly T's faith right here has been to everyone.
Wow.
Pretty great, eh? And that's not all. This year we got two more presents. We got little Aubrey over here, and we got little Sam. They're all part of this too. You see, my little girl Faith got a real special name, doesn't she? I can't think of a more important name at Christmas time than Faith. So I decided to pick a poem to read to you guys today that just really, really captures what that word is really all about, having faith. Because you know what? I don't know where I'd be without my faith. Okay. So this one comes from my favorite book, the Book of Cash, as in Johnny Cash, and it's called The Christmas Guest. Faith, are you ready to help me out?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. She got a really important part too. She's going to help me. Okay. It happened one day near December's end. Two neighbors called on an old-time friend, and they found his shop so meager and lean, made gay with 1,000 boughs of green. And Conrad was sitting with face ashine, when he suddenly stopped as he stitched the twine. And he said, "Old friends, at dawn today, when the cock was crowing the night away, the Lord appeared in a dream to me and said, 'I'm coming, your guest to be.' So I've been busy with feet astir, strewing my shop with branches of fern. The table is spread and the kettle is shined, and over the rafters the holly is twined. Now I'll wait for my Lord to appear, and listen closely so I will hear his steps as he nears my humble place, and I'll open the door and I'll look on his face." So his friends went home and left Conrad alone, for this was the happiest day he had known. For long since his family had passed away, and Conrad had spent many a sad Christmas day. But he knew with the Lord as his Christmas guest, this Christmas would be the dearest and best. So he listened with only joy in his heart, and with every sound he would rise with a start and look for the Lord to be at his door, like the vision he had had a few hours before. So he ran to the window after hearing a sound, but all he could see on the snow-covered ground was a shabby beggar whose shoes were torn and all his clothes were ragged and worn. But Conrad was touched, and he went to the door, and he said, "You know, your feet must be frozen and sore. I have some shoes in my shop for you, and a coat that will keep you warmer, too." "Yes, my buddy, Daddy's over here." So with grateful heart, the man went away, but Conrad noticed the time of day, and he wondered who made the Lord so late, and how much longer he'd have to wait. When he heard a knock, he ran to the door, but it was only a stranger once more, a bent old lady with a shawl of black, with a bundle of kindling piled on her back. She asked for only a place to rest, but that was reserved for Conrad's great guest. But a voice seemed to plead, "Don't send me away. Let me rest for a while on Christmas Day." So Conrad brewed her a steaming cup and told her to sit at the table and sup. But after she left, he was filled with dismay, for he saw that the hours were slipping away, and the Lord hadn't come as he said he would. Then Conrad felt sure he had misunderstood, when out of the stillness he heard a cry,
"Please help me and tell me, where am I?"
So again he opened his friendly door and stood disappointed as twice before. It was only a child who'd wander away and was lost from her family on Christmas Day. Again Conrad's heart was heavy and sad, but he knew he could make this little girl glad. So he called her in and he wiped her tears and he quieted all her childish fears. Then he led her back to her home once more. But as he entered his own darkened door, he knew that the Lord was not coming today, for the hours of Christmas had all passed away. So he went to his room and he knelt down to pray and he said, "Dear Lord, why did you delay? What kept you from coming to call on me? I wanted so much your face to see." When softly in the silence a voice he heard, "Lift up your head, I have kept my word. 3 times I came to your lonely door. I was the beggar with bruised cold feet. I was the woman you gave something to eat. I was the child on the homeless street. 3 times I knocked, 3 times I came in, and each time I found the warmth of a friend. Of all the gifts, love is the best, and I was honored to be your
Christmas guest."
So what do you think, Faith? We should not say about $2 a head for that? You don't think so? You think we should give it all to him for free as a Christmas present?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. It's on the house, guys. Thank you.
Don't seem like Christmas if the mummers are not here. Granny would say as she'd knit in her chair. Things have gone modern, and I suppose that's the cause. Christmas is not like it was.
Keep over there!
Hark, what's the noise out by the porch door? Granny, 'tis mummers, there's 20 or more. Her old withered face brightens up with a grin. Any mummers, nice mummers, loud in. Come in, lovely mummers, don't bother the snow. We can wipe up the water, sure, after you go. Sit, if you can, or on some mummer's knee. Let's see if we know who you be. There's big ones and small ones and tall ones and thin. Boys dressed as women and girls dressed as men. Pumps on their backs and mitts on their feet. My blizzard, we'll die with the heat. There's only one there that I think that I know. That tall fella standing o'er alongside the stove. He's shaking his fist for to make me not tell. Must be Willie from out on the hill. Now that one's a stranger if there ever was one. With his underwear stuffed and his trapdoor undone. Is he wearing his mother's big party till bright? I knows, but I'm not gonna say. Don't suppose you find mummers would turn down a drop. No homebrew or elky, whatever you got. Not the one with these rubber boots on the wrong feet. He's enough for to do him all week. Suppose you can dance, yes, they all nod their heads. They be tapping their feet ever since they came in. Now that the drinks have been all passed around, the mummers are planking her down. Be careful the lamp and hold on to the stove. Don't swing granny hard, 'cause you know that she's old. No need for to care how you buckles the floor, 'cause mummers have danced here before. My God, how hot is it? We'd better go. I allow we'll all get the devil's own cold. Good night and good Christmas, mummers, me dears. Please God, we will see you next year. Good night and good Christmas, mummers, me dears. Please God, we will see you next year.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. My guest tonight, the Intangible Cultural Heritage Development Officer for the Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador, safeguarding traditional culture across our province, the only full-time, provincially funded folklorist in Canada. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Anthropology and Archaeology from Trent University and holds a Master of Arts in Folklore from Memorial University. He's the proprietor of something I absolutely love, which is the St. John's Haunted Hike Ghost Tour. He is also a mummering enthusiast as one of the founding members of the Mummers Festival in St. John's. He is a published author. Many of his books include The Golden Leg, Canadian Ghost Stories Volume 2, Haunted Shores, Haunted Waters, and my personal favorite, Wonderful Strange. A champion for the paranormal here in Newfoundland. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here to have a creepy little Christmas with him. Mr. Dale Jarvis, how are you tonight?
I'm very good. Thank you.
I'm very glad to have you on. You know, I have been talking to many people in Newfoundland, and your name always comes up over and over.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Dale, it means you're doing all the right things, my man. And, you know, I've recently tried my best to get in touch with as many of my heroes. And, you know, you're living, breathing proof that as a fellow author, I know the trials and tribulations, by the way, you're living, breathing proof that dreams do come true. And hence the name paranormal always comes around when Mr. Dale Jarvis is in town.
Yeah. Awesome.
Dale, a creepy Christmas to you.
Thank you.
We're recording a little tiny bit before Christmas. It's actually November as we speak now, but we're going to hopefully have this out the first week of December. I do have some quick questions for you, man, and I know there's a lot of fans out there who are interested, so I got to ask it. You know, I've read a lot of your books, and I've read a lot of your articles and the Telegram and stuff like that as well, but, you know, I've never really knew. What got you into the paranormal, Mr. Jarvis?
You know, it's funny. People ask me that all the time, and I, it's just something that I've always been interested in. You know, even when I was a little kid, it was something that I was drawn to in some way. You know, I always loved kind of mystery. You know, I love magic and mystery and fantasy, and I was a voracious reader when I was a kid. And I can remember being not terribly old and going to the public library, and there were a series of books that were presented by Alfred Hitchcock, like they were like horror stories for kids. And I remember taking those out of the library and taking them home and absolutely loving that material. So it's something that's kind of been with me for as long as I can remember.
That's great, Dale. And, you know, we always have that part of us or one little thing in our life, so to speak, that, shall we say, things blossom for the love of these things. And you know, one of my biggest things about the paranormal is I believe you do have to have a brush with the paranormal to truly believe in a lot of it. And that's definitely a question I always wanted to ask Dale Jarvis. You know, here's a guy who really is, I like to use the word archivist for ghosts. And here I am, a paranormal investigator. Dude, have you ever had an actual encounter, any kind of brush at all with the paranormal?
You know, I think that's one of the most popular questions that people ask me, you know, about my own personal experiences. And I am so much more of a story collector than I am a ghost hunter. You know, like I leave the paranormal investigation stuff to the people that kind of know that inside and out. And I'm really interested in the legends, the myths, the old folklore, that kind of stuff. So I'm not going out and seeking out paranormal activity in the way that some other people who are engaged in this stuff are. But having said that, I live in an old house in St. John's, and the house has several ghost stories associated with it. And I've had a couple odd things happen in the house. I've never seen really, you know, what you would call an apparition or a spirit, but definitely weird things happen in this old house. So I, in my heart, I'm actually a bit of a skeptic, but an open-minded skeptic, and I'm fascinated by the paranormal.
Absolutely. And you know, Dale, I 100% agree with you. I am also very much a skeptic. I came into being a paranormal investigator as an atheist, someone who had no spiritual beliefs or these things. But, you know, due to my dad's story, of course, it basically changed me into someone who's a little more open-minded. And for somebody who's documented so many ghosts and fairies and, shall we say, fabulous beasties. I remember you saying that a few times.
Yeah.
For somebody who's documented a lot of that. You know, what do you feel in your heart might be one of the few things in the paranormal that might actually be real?
You know, the most the most common type of ghost story that I get from Newfoundlanders are what people here would call a token story. And a token story is someone gets a premonition of someone's death, or they have something strange happen at the moment that it happens. So, you know, if someone were to die at a distance, then a family member or a friend would have an experience at that moment and know that that person had kind of passed on. That's the kind of story that I hear most often. It's one of the most common types of hauntings that I hear. And so that makes me very curious when that is so common an experience to have. And I think that, you know, our perception and understanding of the universe is so flawed in some ways. It's so imperfect that maybe there's something to all this. Maybe there are kind of energies that connect us as people. So I'm really interested in that. I'm also really interested in kind of anniversary type hauntings where things happen on the same date year after year on the day that it may have happened, like a murder or a shipwreck or something like that.
Yes, what they would call a residual haunting, something that repeats itself sometimes every day, sometimes once a month, sometimes once every couple of years. I remember hearing the story about the Vikings of Lonesome Meadows.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's other Vikings stories. There's Vikings stories from the south coast of the island, too. And I kind of wonder about that. And I've heard several theories about that. Maybe what we are experiencing there is not so much a ghost or an apparition or the soul of someone. Certainly when we think of ships, ghost ships, it's not something that had a living soul. Maybe what we are experiencing in those types of hauntings is actually time kind of replaying itself somehow, like a little hiccup in time, or time is kind of reversed or is playing over itself in some way. And I think those types of things, you know, have a great deal of fascination for me. So there might be a scientific explanation that we just don't know yet. But those types of hauntings or apparitions or anniversary residual hauntings, I'm really fascinated by.
Well, Dale, we like to think on the subject of technology, maybe not being caught up with what's actually going on with the paranormal. You know, if me and you went back in time 100 years with our cell phones, they'd call us witches.
Yeah, it would be absolutely magical.
Here we are playing Candy Crush, and they'd be trying to burn us at the stake.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty interesting thing. You know, a lot of folklore in Newfoundland really is about Newfoundland. There's so many things tied to our wonderful rock, so to speak. I got to ask you, man, what's your favorite Newfoundland ghost story?
Ah, that is a very good question. So, I mean, I love some of the more legendary stories. Like, there's a story that I tell on the Haunted Hike that I love telling, and it's one of the oldest ones in St. John's, but a headless captain.
Oh, please tell us this story. This sounds awesome already. I'm shaking in my boots. I'm sure my listeners are too. Go ahead, give it to us.
It's a fabulous story about a man who had rented a house, which at that point was at the very edge of the city. Today, it's right close to downtown, but in the day, in the 1700s, it was pretty much at the edge of what was then civilized. And he had strange things happening in the house. He would hear knocking at the door, and when he would open the door, there'd be no one there. And one night when he was coming home from a party, his friend had driven him home in his horse and carriage, and the horse stopped. And this is something that happens in a lot of paranormal stories, that animals are somehow more sensitive to things than we humans are. Anyway, the horse stopped. Mm-hmm. And so this gentleman said, oh, well, I'll just walk the rest of the way. Walked out towards his house along this tree-covered lane. And when he got close, there was a figure standing there in front of his house. And the figure slowly turned to face the man. And the man saw that it was the figure of a gentleman, a very tall man with his head cut completely off just above the shoulders. Then he raced away from it as fast as he could, burst into a boarding house, and he begged for shelter there for the night. And when he told his story, the people that ran the boarding house, they told him that the house that he lived in now was a home that had been owned by a beautiful lady who had a companion, a captain, an English seagoing captain who had sailed between England and Newfoundland. And when he was in St. John's, he and the lady were always together. But while the captain was away at sea, this lady had a second lover, and this jealous lover determined that he would do away with the captain. And he hid, and he waited until one night when the captain had just said, you know, good night to his loved one, had stepped back onto the pathway, and the lover leapt forward with an exceptionally sharp sword and severed the captain's head from his shoulders. And this was in the era before there was a police force in Newfoundland. And so the culprit was never brought to justice. And people say that the soul of the captain still haunts that location forever in search of his unpunished murderer. And that's one of the oldest recorded ghost stories that we have for St. John's. That dates back to 1745. So we have a long history of ghost stories. That's one of my favorites. It's kind of a, you know, there's a good bit of drama and jilted lovers and whatnot in it. So I like that one.
No, man. And I love it when you tell it, Dale. You know, it's pretty endearing to have that story told. I've actually heard that story already from you, but I'm sure a lot of people out there haven't tonight. And they may be thinking twice when they hear the sound coming from Signal Hill.
Yeah.
Okay, my friend. Now, you know, I happen to have seen you quite a few times in different parades around town. And, you know, one really struck me, of course, is the Hobby Horse Parade. Or, you know, I've seen you actually do that. Tell us about your hobby horse hobby. I mean, a lot of people out there have no idea what a hobby horse is. And why don't you take it away and let people know about this hobby of yours?
I think when people hear the phrase hobby horse, they think of the children's toy. You know, that the children's toys are the little horses with the little horse's head and a stick with maybe the wheel at the end, and the kids kind of ride it around. The Newfoundland tradition of the hobby horse is very, very different. It's an older tradition, and the hobby horse is the head of a horse, like the size of a horse's head. So it's a much, much larger puppet, with a jaw that will kind of open and close and snock shut. It'll make this kind of clapping noise that comes together. And then there'll be a big cape or sheet or piece of canvas that will hang down from it. And you know, a person or two people or three people can get underneath this sheet. And they would go around at Christmas time. We have this tradition of what's called here mummering, which is a disguise tradition during the 12 days of Christmas that people would go from door to door, house to house, and it was kind of a guessing game. You would show up in disguise and your neighbors would try and guess who you were. And the hobby horse was always the last figure to kind of enter into the house, and no one wanted to let the hobby horse in because it was this element of chaos. It would come in and it would, you know, get the dog all riled up, and it would, you know, grab the tablecloth and pull it from the table. I read one story about a hobby horse going in and stealing the pot of soup off the stove and leaving with it. So this was an old tradition that dated back. The first hobby horse that was here in the province that we know of was in the 1500s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert brought a hobby horse with him to Newfoundland from England. When we started the Mummers Festival in 2009, there were very few of these things left. There were maybe five or six in private hands or at the museum, the provincial museum, or in archives. So we started a program to teach people how to make these things again. And we kind of, old-time hobby horses were made out of wood. The really old ones were actually made out of the skull of a horse. That's a hard thing to teach in an afternoon workshop. So we developed a template to make it out of cardboard. And so now they're cardboard and they're covered with fabric, and they have a wooden pieces in the jaws with nails that kind of can make that noise when they clap together. So we've taught hundreds of people how to make these hobby horses, which were once a part of the Newfoundland Christmas tradition.
Wow. Well, enough horsing around, my friend. Tell me about any other projects you may have on the horizon. You know, I always know that the Haunted Hike is going to be just around the corner again, once it gets a bit warmer out. When is your Haunted Hike resuming?
The Haunted Hike runs during the summer months, so it runs from June until mid-September, usually.
You hear that out there, all you tourists? You hear that out there, tourists? If you're in St. John's, please drop by the Haunted Hike. Let me tell you, every time I've gone four times, actually, Dale, over the years. And it's always fun, and there's always something new. You guys change it every year a little bit, hey?
We change it a little bit, and we actually have two different tour routes now. So if you come on Sunday or Monday night, it's a completely different tour than it is from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And for the past couple of years, we've been working with Parks Canada at Signal Hill National Historic Site to run a program called Ghosts of Signal Hill, which is all ghost stories on the hill. It's not so much a walking tour as it is kind of a sit-down ghost storytelling session, and it's all done in character of a soldier who would have fought on the hill in the 1760s. So that's been a great fun new project for us as well.
And I can't help but associate the word heritage with Mr. Dale Jarvis, especially with all the historic landmarks here in Newfoundland. And one place that's very near and dear to my heart as a paranormal investigator, a place that I've actually investigated 20 times over the last 2 years. I've clocked almost 1,000 hours of investigating time and of review time for my recorders. As an EVP researcher, my favorite place to go is Cape Spear. Dale, can you tell me a ghost story of the Cape Spear that might be linked to some of the madness that I've captured down there over the last few years?
You know, it's one of these places that keeps coming up time and time again. And for listeners who are unfamiliar with the site, it's the easternmost point of North America. So there's a very old lighthouse there. The lighthouse itself, I have heard from some of the parks interpreters that work there that they have had strange things happen. They've heard footsteps and whatnot happen in that building. And that's the old part of the hill. But then kind of closer to the water, there are World War II gun emplacements and bunkers. And that's also an area where lots of people have had strange, strange things happen. So there are probably two different types of areas there where strange activities have been reported. The lighthouse itself, which is kind of the more historic spot. But then this Second World War site, which is a creepy spot, as you know, to kind of go through in the darkness of night. Perfect spot for ghost hunting.
Absolutely, Dale. In fact, I recommend it highly to anybody out there. 20 times down in those bunkers by yourself at night, I must be either half insane or completely desensitized from reading your books. Dale, of course, as we draw close to the end here, can you tell us a little bit about this new book, Any Mummers Allowed In? Christmas Mummering Traditions in Newfoundland and Labrador. You know, a lot of people out there don't really know that in Newfoundland, we kind of have a Halloween tradition on Christmas.
Yeah.
We get to dress up and have a bit of fun. So tell us all about it. Tell us about this book and what people can expect when they hopefully purchase it.
A couple generations ago, Halloween wasn't the dressing up part of Halloween didn't really exist in Newfoundland. That was a tradition that was kind of introduced in recent memory to Newfoundland. But there is this disguise tradition. The word mummer comes from an old kind of Germanic word, basically meaning to disguise yourself or to put on a mask. And people at the kind of the end of the year would enact this centuries-old ritual of disguise and going from door to door. Sometimes in some communities there would be a hobby horse. Sometimes they would do a little play when they came to the house, a play that was about death and rebirth, you know, so which kind of, you know, mimics the end of the year, the death of 1 year and the birth of a new year. Some aspects of this might be even pre-Christian. You know, some of these are very, very old traditions. In other places in Europe, they have similar kind of year-end traditions. And so it's something that has been in Newfoundland for a very long time. Every Newfoundlander can probably tell you a story about someone going out mummering or jannying, as it's known in some communities. I wrote a book about the history of the tradition and kind of looked at all the different ways it plays out in individual communities, because it's not the same in every town. Different places do it in slightly different ways. So I want to kind of talk about the history of that, and that the types of costumes that people would wear. And we've been involved with this, with the Heritage Foundation and the Mummers Festival, and kind of revitalizing this tradition and giving people an opportunity to do it. I had lots of people tell me that once people got carpets in their houses, they didn't like the mummers coming in as much because they'd always track in snow and mud on their boots. But I think really it declined a bit when people just didn't know their neighbors like they used to. People used to live in really tiny communities. You knew everybody, so you didn't worry too much about letting strangers in because you knew that you were probably related to them in some way. Mm-hmm. These days, as we've become more urban, the tradition has shifted a little bit. There was also a time, quite a long period of time in the province, where the practice was actually illegal. There was a murder in Bay Roberts, a community about an hour's drive from St. John's, in the 1860s. And the authorities of the day said, okay, that's it. We're going to ban this tradition because it could be associated with a bit of violence and a bit of mischief. People were in disguise. They might have a bit to drink. And at times people would, you know, if they had a grudge against someone, if there was kind of an unfinished business throughout the year, that might be the time of year when you were in disguise and you might, you know, give someone a good knock with a junk of wood or something. So the authorities tried to stamp it out. It didn't quite work the way that they had wanted to. It was so such a beloved tradition that it continues on to today. And the paranormal connection is actually that that murder case in the 1860s, which took place in the community of Bay Roberts. Bay Roberts is one place that I've come across where there is actually a ghost mummer story. People have reported seeing a phantom mummer kind of wandering the back streets of the community. So maybe it was this man, Isaac Mercer, who was murdered by the mummers those centuries ago.
Oh, my goodness. I have a feeling I know where I might be going for my next paranormal investigation.
Yeah, I'll have to let you know exactly where the murder happened. You can go check it out.
I'm going to have to throw my wreath over my head and maybe put a blanket over there, too, take my violin out, and have myself a Johnny Jig, and hopefully get in contact with the dead mummer that may be running around this place. Wow, that's pretty creepy, Dale. Now, Dale, as we draw to a close, of course, first and foremost, do want to thank you so much for being on my show, man.
Oh,
it means
you.
The world to me. I am a true fan of Mr. Jarvis. I'm sure a lot of people out there are as well. Dale, where can people find you, your books?
The easiest way you can find me online. I'm easy to find. You can just find me on Facebook or just Google me. DaleJarvis.ca is my personal website. The Haunted Hike is hauntedhike.com. And if you go to Amazon or Chapters Indigo and any of the online book retailers, you can just type in Dale Jarvis and all the ghost books are there. And the new Any Mummers Loud In book is available online as well. It's published by Flanker Press. So you can also search for Flanker Press and they have a website as well.
I gotta say, Flanker is pretty awesome, and you know, they do publish a lot of the stranger and more odd books, so
yeah.
You definitely found the right fit for you, Mr. Jarvis, definitely. Of course, from me to you, thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you, Dale.
Merry Christmas.
I know it sounds strange to say that because it's still November, but remember, when I release this, it'll be December month. Guys, get out there, buy Mr. Jarvis's book, Any Mummers Allowed In, Christmas Mummering Traditions in Newfoundland and Labrador. And thank you again, Mr. Jarvis, for being on tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, buddy.
And with that, I do say goodbye. I look forward to talking with you once again. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
And welcome back to the show. Tonight is no stranger on my show. That's right. For the second year in a row, I get to bring back an old friend. Somebody who is quite familiar with the big guy, the hairy guy, the Sasquatch, the Yeti, the Mountain Man. He's got so many names. But there's only one name I ever really associated with Bigfoot because, well, what can I say? I'm a big fan of edgy radio. I'm even a fan of Beyond the Edge Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, here to speak about, well, Bigfoot. Mr. Eric Altman has joined me tonight here on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Hey, bud. How are you?
I'm doing great since last year. I hope this year is finding you well.
As well as can be.
Lots of big changes over in the States this year.
Oh, yeah. It's been an interesting year, to say the least.
I got to say, it's been interesting, too, to hear the reactions about not just so much about, you know, President Trump, but to hear more about all these celebrity and singers' deaths and stuff like that. 2016 has not been very kind to, shall we say, the entertainment industry. But, you know, I'm glad I can still turn on Beyond the Edge Radio and listen to you every Sunday night. Am I correct?
Yeah, we're still on the air. It's our 10th year, celebrating our 10th year on the air now. We're in our 10th season. And, yeah, we're still alive and kicking, so we haven't killed over in 2016 yet.
No, it will not be the Leonard Cohen of Bigfoot Research either. Eric, of course, is no slouch. He's been featured on different shows, documentaries, and just has a love affair with the Sasquatch. What can I say? He's a mountain man himself, I guess you could say. Eric, tell me a little bit about what's been going on in 2016 for you, Bigfoot-wise.
It's actually been a really slow year, to be honest with you. We've had a couple of reports in Pennsylvania and on the East Coast. nothing real exciting as far as stuff going on here in the East Coast. Around the country, the reports are coming in. A lot of people are filing reports. There's new stuff on YouTube. There's new stuff reported in the media. A lot of it's unfortunately, a lot of it is either hoaxed material, a lot of it's misidentifications, but the media is eating it up and still putting it out there as if it's, you know, Bigfoot stuff, but nothing new. It's the same old as far as evidence or proof that Bigfoot's real, but, you know, hey, that's par for the course.
And, you know, I never want to, you know, kind of stick one person in only one category. You know, Eric, I know you're into all realms of the paranormal with your own radio show. And how's the show been going this year?
The show's going good. We've had a wide diversity of guests on, as we always do, and we've had some great topics this year, great discussions. We're chugging right along. Marie and I are doing great, and we've had a great season so far. We're wrapping the show up in 2 weeks for the year. I'm going to take a Christmas break and be back in 2017 to start all over again.
There you go. And I love saying start all over again, because new beginnings, right? Let's hope 2017 is better to us all.
Amen, brother. Amen.
You know, Eric, it's interesting because so many people know you as the Bigfoot guy. We get labeled as that. You know, I'm in the paranormal investigation myself, mainly EVP, and most people label me as, you know, the ghost guy. But reality is we all have an interest in many different, you know, facets of the paranormal. When I think of you, though, like, I can't help but think of Yeti and Bigfoot and stuff, and the word Pennsylvania. And I got so many great friends who've been on my show as well. From Pennsylvania, what the heck is going on over there? Why does this seem like it's such a popular place for Bigfoot? And among just one thing, Bigfoot is only one thing that goes on. There's a lot of hauntings as well. What do you think it is about Pennsylvania that's so special?
We're all just weird.
Great
it's,
answer.
It's true. We're all just strange. I think it's something in the water. You're right. Pennsylvania is a very unusual state when it comes to strange and unusual phenomenon. We don't just have Bigfoot sightings, and there is an abundance of Bigfoot sightings. People don't necessarily associate Bigfoot with Pennsylvania, but there is quite a number of Bigfoot reports that go way, way back to the early 1800s. But there's the ghostly phenomenon that goes back hundreds of years. UFO sightings, they're a commonplace phenomenon. At one time, Pennsylvania was considered one of the top five states in the United States with UFO reports, according to MUFON. There's all kinds of strange activities. There's strange locations. We've got Gravity Hill in Pennsylvania. There's all kinds of strange cryptid creatures being seen and reported. There's always something strange and unusual going on here, and something fun to do and check out. It's just a really bizarre place.
You know, for me, there has to be a reason why this place seems like it's an epicenter for activity. You know, I've heard people talk about ley lines. Is there any running through Pennsylvania?
I'm sure there is. To be honest with you, I've never really looked to see if there were. I know from the research I've done into the Bigfoot phenomenon, we find a lot of the reports, as strange as it sounds, seem to take place around power sources or waterways or something that has to do with that can be able to conduct electricity, whether it be like a electrical, what do they call them, electrical towers or lines, waterways, gas well lines, anything that seems to have to do with natural resources. And maybe that's something that do with the paranormal phenomenon as well.
Absolutely. You know, we've tied it together many, many times. It seems like hauntings take place not only in places of great tragedy. Like, the first one that pops in my head is obviously Gettysburg. Like, I just think, when I think of haunting, like quintessential hauntings with many documented experiences by so many people and repeatable data, I think of Gettysburg always. And it seems like tragedy is always linked to these things, but could it be something, you know, really water? I think water would be a cause, well, maybe not so much as a cause, but maybe a necessity for a haunting. Think about it. If we are like made up mostly of water, if there is a part of us that survives when we die, wouldn't it not seek out water to survive in some capacity? It would make sense, right?
Yeah, well, water is a great, it really helps electricity pass through it. So maybe it has something to do with energy and water. You know, water containing energy, holding energy. It would make sense for hauntings and as well as for Bigfoot. If Bigfoot is a being of energy, it's possible.
Yeah, and it would make sense because, you know, here we are. We still haven't been able to capture a ghost in a bottle yet. I'm sorry, guys, but, you know, that Ghostbusters movie isn't real. it actually isn't how it's done. We still haven't caught a ghost, shall we say, in a bottle yet, nor have we managed to capture a Bigfoot. Do you think there might be some kind of connection there? Do you think that this creature, this Sasquatch, this Bigfoot, do you think it might be possible that this thing isn't really part of our realm and it just kind of shows up from time to time?
Well, that's one of the theories that people in the field talk about. They think that maybe Bigfoot isn't really necessarily a terrestrial being from Earth. It might be interdimensional or perhaps a extraterrestrial being. There are theories thrown about, and I don't know if I necessarily prescribe to that because there's no proof that it is able to transfer between dimensions or it does come from another planet or another universe. We don't know. We don't have the technology to really say that's what it does, that people guess. And I think mainly because we don't have any physical evidence to prove the animal exists. A lot of it's hypothesis, a lot of it's guessing, you know, it's guesswork. It's, you know, people just making assumptions and they're trying to solve a mystery with another mystery. They don't know. So they're grasping at straws. And I think it's a little foolish to do that, but who knows? At this point, everybody's just trying to find an answer.
I hate the idea, but I also love the idea of someday somebody finally getting a Bigfoot, because you know what? Suddenly the mystery is solved and science will step in, and then suddenly we're just people who, well, we're not, people won't think we're crazy anymore, which is great, but unfortunately the scientist, the lab coach, so to speak, will step in there and our job will be done.
Yeah, I can retire.
But you know what? We're not going to want to retire just yet. Talk to me a little tiny bit about some of the things you got coming up this year, my friend. We mentioned a few minutes ago to each other off the air. You're scheduled to speak at Pennhurst Paracon number 3.
Yeah, Bob Christopher, Dave Giuliano, they're helping to organize another event at Pennhurst this year in June. And they've asked me to come back up and speak again. And it's going to be one of the very few rare appearances where I'm going to be lecturing in 2017. So I agreed to come back up and talk again at Pennhurst this year. That'll be the first weekend in June. And looking forward to coming back to that. So that was a fun event last year. We had a lot of people come out to that event. It was sold out like the first couple of weeks they advertised the event. So I think they're going to be advertising tickets soon. So it should sell out pretty quick.
Hear that out there, guys? Anybody in Pennsylvania? Get out there. Let's see you at Pennhurst. That'd be awesome. And also, Eric got the 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And it seemed like only yesterday you've already pulled one of these off. Am I correct? Seemed like only a little while ago, maybe like within the last few months.
Yeah, that was in May. We did our first Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure in May. And it was surprisingly a big success. Usually I've done these little public camping outings where we get maybe 25 or 30 people to come out and attend. And this one, we had over 250 people come out for the event. And it was pretty successful. We raised over $3,000 for the charities that we had on board with us. And people loved it. It was very well received. People wanted another one. So I went to a couple of the other co-sponsors and organizers and said, hey, let's try to do it again and maybe do a couple more days instead of just one day. Let's do two. Let's have some more movies. Let's have some more speakers, add some more vendors, you know, kick it up a notch and see what we come up with. So, we're going to do it again this year in 2017, in May, the first weekend in May, 5th, 6th, and 7th, same location since it's such a beautiful campground, modern, very wide open, a lot of space for us, great pavilion, great area for us to have it at. And it's centrally located in southwestern Pennsylvania, right in the heart of where all the sightings have been recently in the last few years, a lot of activity. And it's a great place to take people out and show them where we do our research, give them a taste of what it's like to do research, put them out in the woods so they can get a feel of, you know, what it's like to be out there looking and you know, doing what we do as researchers. So it gives them the chance to do that. They get to hear researchers who've been doing it, get to meet other eyewitnesses and hear their stories and share their experiences and get to come out and learn something and have fun. Plus, the whole time we're raising money for three charities in the area, two animal shelters and a Make-A-Wish Foundation for adults, and hopefully raise some money for them and have a good time doing it.
Eric, I think that's wonderful. You know, what a great way to give back to your community, doing something you love to do. And, you know, I do something similar every year myself. I won't get into the details of it, but, you know, I must say that there is a part of it for me, too. I get a lot out of it as well. I feel great when I do those charity events and give people that experience. Just even for 1 second, they think there might be something out there that's more than meets the eye. You know what I mean? And I think that's really, really special. Speaking of more than meets the eye, you mentioned that there has been a few sightings and some things going on this year in that area, or she said over the last few years. Talk to me a little tiny bit of what's going on over there.
Well, as I mentioned, we've had a couple of reports that I've investigated personally. Unfortunately, for the most part of the year, I've been laid up with some health issues. I've been in the hospital this fall, so I haven't had a chance to do much research. But earlier this spring and into early summer, we got a couple of reports from the Fayette County area where we're holding our camping adventure again. We had one in May where it was a pretty interesting report. It happened on, I believe, May the 10th. There was a couple driving home late one night, probably about 11:30 at night. It was raining outside. They were coming down a back mountain road. And with rainy conditions at night, it's very difficult to see, so they were driving pretty slowly. Ahead of them, as they were driving down this back mountain road, ahead of them, they witnessed a large animal come down off the embankment on their left. And at first they thought it was a bear because it was a large animal, but they couldn't see far enough ahead to tell exactly what it was. They were driving slow enough that they didn't have to really brake. They just slowed down a little more. They watched the animal cross the road very slowly and lumber off the road down an embankment on the right and disappear into the tree line. And they weren't sure exactly what it was, so they came to a complete stop, dug around in the glove box for a flashlight, and found one. And began to shine the flashlight down the embankment on the right to see if they could tell what kind of animal it was, because they were just assuming it was a bear or large deer. And as they were looking down the embankment on the right, they caught something in the peripheral on the left coming down the embankment on the left, on the left side of the road. A second animal came down off the embankment on the road, and this one was much closer to the car, probably about 25 to 50 feet. And whatever it was, walked out in the middle of the road and stopped. And that's when they turned their attention from the right embankment to the center of the roadway, and they saw this thing standing there on two legs. And it was just standing there in the middle of the road about 25 to 50 feet in front of the car, just staring at them. And they could tell it was not a bear. It was up on two legs, completely covered with hair, arms hanging down below the knees, and it was staring back at them. And they had no idea what this thing was. Their first reaction was to back away from the animal, which they began to do. The animal remained standing there looking at them. They were looking at it as they backed away. This animal never moved. They figured, well, maybe if we drive towards it, that'll scare it. It'll take off down the hill and disappear. They began to drive towards the animal. The animal still didn't move. It stood its ground, and they eventually hit it with their car. They bumped it with their bumper, and they weren't going very fast. They hit it enough to, they thought, would at least get it to move, and it didn't. It stood there. It leaned down, put its hands on the hood of the car, and looked down into the windshield at the couple. The couple looked back at it. The stare-off went on for a few seconds, and finally the creature stood up, turned, and did eventually walk off the roadway to the embankment on the right, down the hillside, and disappeared from sight. The couple freaked out. They drove home, got on the internet, found a local researcher who lived pretty close to them, contacted him. He was up there the next day, met with them at the sighting location, took their report, looked for any signs of tracks or evidence, couldn't find anything, couldn't find any damage to the hood of the car, any sign of the creature being there, because, of course, it was raining, and anything that would have been left was washed away. They couldn't find any tracks. We got wind of the report through Stan Gordon, a mutual researcher in the area who had heard from this local guy. We contacted the local guy. He refused to give us the name of the witnesses or the exact location. And from the report that he sent out, we were able to deduce where the sighting actually took place. We sent a team up. We investigated the area as thoroughly as we could, and we couldn't find any evidence to show that there was one, let alone two creatures across the road. We did find some large game trails, but we find no evidence to support the story. We were not able to talk with the witnesses, but it was a very compelling story nonetheless, and we had to leave it at that because the witness who got the report, or the researcher who got the report from the two witnesses, refused to share any information with anybody outside of, you know, the witnesses and himself.
Gotcha. Well, that was awesome. I could sit back and listen to that kind of stuff all day long. That's really, really interesting, Eric. And it's so great to hear till you still got that level head about you, you know? It's missing. It's missing with a lot of people out there who are into this. Everything's a Bigfoot. And I know that your word is a lot more credible than a lot of other people's, even people I know personally, who are hopefully listening to this show right now and listening to an amazing report. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, you just told me an amazing story, and the idea that this could just be a story, it just never crosses my mind, because I know that these people who are reporting these things truly believe they've seen something. But has Eric Altman himself ever had an experience with the big guy, so to speak?
I can't answer that saying I have. I've had multiple encounters in the forest with things that I can't say was or wasn't a Bigfoot. And what I mean by that is I've been out for, gosh, 2017 will mark 20 years of me going out in the field investigating. I've heard things in the woods that I can't explain. I consider myself fairly familiar with wildlife, sounds, sign, seeing wildlife, being out there as long as I have. I would consider myself fairly knowledgeable, but I don't know everything. Some of the things I've heard in the woods, I scratch my head and I've not been able to find on the internet or identify positively or been able to track down what the source was. So some of the sounds I've heard, I can't identify. I don't know what they were. Some of the things I've seen in the ground, possible tracks, they were possible tracks. I never saw the animal make the track or leave the footprint or whatever it was. So I can't say what that was. I've seen things very quickly moving through the forest, just a glimpse of something. I can't tell you what it was. I can't tell you if it was a deer or bear or maybe even a Sasquatch. I didn't get a good enough look at it. I've had too many encounters like that over the years. I call them possible encounters because they were. It was possibly a Bigfoot. I don't know. It possibly wasn't a Bigfoot. I can't honestly say. But I've had a lot of those types of encounters. I've never had a conclusive sighting where I can sit here and tell you, yeah, I've seen one. Or yes, I've heard one. Or yes, I've definitely found Bigfoot tracks. Some of the tracks that I've found that have corroborated a sighting, where a sighting has taken place, I go investigate and find what are possible tracks at that location. In my mind, make me think, yeah, they very well could be Bigfoot tracks. They're right where this witness says he saw something, and they're in that vicinity, and you know they're the same, what should be the same size of a Bigfoot track, and you know they're out of the parameters of a normal deer track or bear track. You know they're a little large for a human track, so. Those are situations where, you know, I would have to say it's a good possibility that those were Bigfoot tracks. But like I said, I can't answer, yes, I've had one, and I can't say, no, I haven't. I don't know.
Amazing. You know, Eric, it makes me feel like you're so much more credible being able to say, I don't know. I wish I had a dollar for every time I had to say, I don't know.
I'm honest. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, oh my God, every time I go out, I hear a Bigfoot. And that's, fortunately, people today don't use good common sense. They want so bad to experience things, and they want to believe everything they experience. I shouldn't say everybody, but a good majority of people want so badly, and it happens in the paranormal field, it happens in the UFO field. People want to experience things. They want so badly to believe what they experience is what they want. And they forget that there's logical answers and there's rational answers that can explain what they experienced. Instead of trying to find those rational, logical answers, they just throw that square peg into that circle. They force it in there. It's got to be a ghost. It can't be anything else. And a lot of people anymore don't look for the logical, honest answer to stuff. It has to be that, what they want it to be. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people have lost objectivity and lost, you know, being honest.
Gotcha. Well, I'm honestly still very interested in your own experiences, Eric. And, you know, you said almost, you say it was 20 years now in 2017, you've been a researcher. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so many years, man. That's amazing. Any plans to write books or anything about all this craziness?
No.
No?
I've started writing books, started writing a book, I should say, years ago. And I must have ADD or ADHD or something like that, because I start to write and I'll get sidetracked and I'll get bored with what I'm doing and go on to something else. And I'm a perfectionist when it comes to things that I do, or at least try to be, because I want it to be perfect. And what I've written so far, I go back and rewrite it, and I read it and I rewrite it and I read it and rewrite it. And I'm like, oh, this isn't right. This is missing something, or I'm not happy with this chapter. So I write for a little while and I get bored with it and I put it aside, and then I go read it and I rewrite it, and it's never going to get done. So unfortunately, I'll be like 80 and I'll be like on my deathbed when I think I'll finish that book now.
It'll be 4 pages long and it'll be full of scribbles. Well, you know, you've left quite the legacy though, my friend. 10 years at Beyond the Edge Radio, and people can go back and listen to all those shows from many years ago. Am I correct?
Yeah, there's archives out there somewhere. I've lost track. I know there's stuff on iTunes. There's like 135 shows on iTunes.
Wow.
The last couple of years. There's Podbean. There's Podomatic. There's, Blueberry Podcast. There's so many different sources where that people can find the shows. Planet Paranormal. I can't even remember some of the sources we have shows out there. They're floating around out there. There's well over 400 shows out there.
Gotcha. Eric, our time is getting actually kind of short. I seem every time we talk, time goes really, really fast. We must be one of those warp zones we keep talking about. Eric, before I let you go on, a little bit of advice to anybody out there who might have, you know, the passion you got, the chase after Bigfoot. You know, the wannabe cryptozoologists out there, the people who want to be field investigators, the paranormal enthusiasts out there. Have you got any advice for them when they go out in the field and just try to get their own answers?
Yeah, don't. Don't go out and look.
Don't go out and look? Really?
Yeah, really. And the reason I say that is not to discourage people from going to look, because I encourage people to go out there and seek answers. But there's so many people that go out there thinking they're going to find Bigfoot behind every bush, and they're going to find Bigfoot their first time out, that they start finding Bigfoot every time they go out, and it's not Bigfoot evidence. And unfortunately, it's gotten so bad, especially the last couple of years. I see pictures on Facebook and I see videos on YouTube of literally hundreds and thousands of videos and pictures of people wanting to believe the evidence they have is Bigfoot, and it's really not. And they're fooling themselves, and they're fooling their friends, and they're, let's face it, bud, if Bigfoot is in every picture they're putting out there and every video that's out there, we'd have proof that this thing was real.
True.
We'd have a body, we'd have undeniable proof, but 90 to 95% of the evidence people are putting out there is their own wishful thinking that Bigfoot's real. And I don't want to discourage people from going out there to research. I encourage people to seek the truth. But if you're going to do it objectively. And remember, not everything you capture on film or audio or video is Bigfoot evidence.
Here's one for you. Here's one for you, Eric. How about for every hour of field investigating, you have your mandatory 24 hours of paper research? How's that sound?
That's perfect.
We'll give him a guideline for Christmas this year.
Be very critical of what you do. Be very skeptical of your own research, because if you're not, if you don't put a critical eye to what you do and scrutinize every little bit of research that you do, then you know, you're going to believe everything out there is what you want it to be, and that's not the case.
There you go, guys. Some very sound advice stay the hell out of the woods unless you know what's really in there first. And maybe then you might be at, shall we say, more ready to go and hunt yourself a Yeti. Eric from the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, thank you so much for once again making my Squatchmas just so much more hairy. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being here. And I'm looking forward to listening to you on Sunday.
My pleasure, bud. Thanks for asking me on. It's good to talk to you again and have a merry Squatchmas.
Same to you.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.